Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Supervisor Jim Desmond is running for Congress. Find out which candidates have thrown their hats in the ring to run for his 5th supervisorial district on our show today. The district across northern San Diego is vast, running from the ocean in the west to the Anza Borrego Desert here in East County. Santee has granted approval to 4 applicants seeking to open cannabis dispensaries, which stand to boost the city's revenues for taxpayers significantly. A final hearing on the controversial Cottonwood sand mine along the Sweetwater River in Rancho San Diego is set for September before the county supervisors. Grossmont Union High School District's trustees took the unusual step of unanimously voting to follow state transparency laws, including the Brown Act, as well as their own bylaws, after a report by the San Diego Union-Tribune revealed secret meetings and backroom deals by the board's conservative majority. California News Service reports on findings of a study comparing how much money women college graduates make compared to men, and we'll have results on our show today. On Green Scene, hear about yet another lawsuit filed by environmental groups against the city of Santee after its city council approved the massive Bonita Ranch housing project yet again, despite courts twice overturning those approvals in the past. The community of Crest, which was devastated by the 2003 Cedar Fire, will soon be getting a new fire station to better protect the community from wildfires. A pedestrian death in Ramona is the latest in a string of fatal accidents along State Route 67. And an El Cajon woman lost her life in a 3-vehicle crash in Dehesa. On Destination East County, we'll have some festive events for those hot August nights and days, including the Ramona Country Fair, San Diego Dark Sky Fest in Julian, a Gatsby-themed Mount Helix Food and Wine Festival celebrating the Mount Helix Park's centennial, a country music pool party at Saquon, Santee's Summer Concerts, La Mesa's Classic Car Show, Julian Mountain Brew Fest, Macy Gray in concert at the Magnolia, Grammy Award-winning Alabama Shakes at San Diego State, Julian Mountain Brew Fest, Open Farm Days at the Oasis Camel Dairy, and the new Jacumbia Fest bringing Afro-Colombian vibes to Jacumba Hot Springs. We'll also have a look back at the life and legacy of Keith and Priscilla Webb, owners of Julian Hard Cider, the first such facility in the nation. From California News Service, hear about new online counseling available for undocumented students amid growing fears over immigration enforcement actions. On Public News Service's Yonder Report, hear why federal funding cuts for public broadcasting could make some rural communities become news deserts, among other stories. We'll also take you on the road to Ramona's new Camel Lavender Farm. Then, hear where to beat the heat in county cool zones, plus we'll have some hot weather health tips from Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanni, East County Magazine's chief corner columnist. And finally, on our business report, hear about a major remodeling plan for Grossmont Center in La Mesa, including Phase 1 plans for the regional shopping mall approved by the City Council. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. San Diego's 5th Supervisorial District will soon have a new representative. Supervisor Jim Desmond, a conservative Republican, has announced plans to run for the 49th Congressional District, a coastal enclave currently represented by Congressman Mike Levine, a Democrat. Several candidates, all from North County, have announced their intent to run for the supervisor seat to represent District 5, a vast tract across northern San Diego County that extends from the coast in Oceanside to desert communities including Borrego Springs, Ocotillo Wells, and Agua Caliente. It also encompasses Escondido, Palomar Mountain, a half dozen tribal reservations, inland and mountain communities such as Valley Center, Warner Springs, and Santa Isabel, and many more cities and towns. Kyle Crahill, chairman of the San Diego County Democratic Party, announced this week that he is stepping down from that role to launch a campaign for the nonpartisan 5th Supervisorial District, Times of San Diego reports. Crahill also serves as deputy chief of staff and district director for Congressman Mike Levine. He lives in Oceanside, graduated high school as valedictorian, earned a bachelor's degree in government from Harvard University, and served as a planning commissioner in Oceanside, according to his campaign bio. On his campaign website, Crahill states, "I'm running for supervisor because every family deserves a future they can afford. That means safe neighborhoods, reliable transit, clean air, and a roof over their heads. I'm running for supervisor to fight for bold climate action, reliable and resilient infrastructure, and housing policies that put working people first," Crahill concludes. Two North County mayors, both Republicans, are also vying for the supervisorial position, Coast News reports. Vista Mayor John Franklin and San Marcos Mayor Rebecca Jones. Both have praised Desmond's representation on the Board of Supervisors. Franklin, who served on Vista's city council before becoming mayor, wants to prioritize a return to law and order, fiscal responsibility, and better mental health and addiction resources, especially for those who are homeless. His endorsements include Congressman Daryl Issa and former supervisor Diane Jacob, according to his campaign website. He says he wants to spend more money on law enforcement and jail more people for misdemeanor crimes. Coast News quotes him as saying, "The criminal justice experiment needs to come to an end. We've got to fight for the restoration of law and order." Jones has served on the San Marcos City Council before she became mayor. She wants to advocate for affordable housing to prevent homelessness and touts her record in San Marcos on this issue. She pledged fiscal responsibility to prevent waste of taxpayer funds. She also wants to streamline mental health services and calls for better coordination between law enforcement agencies, particularly during emergencies such as wildfires and floods. On her campaign website, she says, "I've made public safety the cornerstone of my leadership. Under my watch, San Marcos achieved the lowest crime rate in our city's 63-year history, ranked in the top 15 safest cities in California, and one of America's safest college towns." The candidates will first compete in a primary next spring, with the top two advancing in a runoff election in November. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is John Tidwell with a business report from East County Magazine. The city of Santee is taking the high road, approving four business permits for sale of cannabis after what Mayor John Minto described as an exhaustive vetting process. Out of the 16 applicants, the four selected all have experience retailing in highly regulated industries such as liquor and gasoline. The stores will offer both medical and recreational cannabis or marijuana products. The four permits were awarded to Buzz, Dr. Green Thumbs, Green Reserve, and Flight, with Embark selected as the alternate vendor if one of the top four drops out or fails to complete the remaining steps for a required state license. Minto told a packed city council chamber that every applicant made some great points, but ultimately the council could only choose four. "I wish we could choose everybody, but we can't," he said, referring to the city's new ordinance, which allows only four cannabis vendors. Vice Mayor Rob McNellis, who helped develop the approval process for the cannabis permitting, said of the vote, "This is literally the most difficult thing I've ever done sitting up here." The vetting of the proposals revealed that sale of recreational and medicinal cannabis is lucrative and growing, despite the escalating costs for product, increased taxes, and competition from the cheaper black market. Each of the groups projected first-year annual sales ranging from a few million dollars to one that said it expected more than $20 million. Flight, in its application, said it expects over 1,000 transactions daily, with an average sale of $77. Property owners Chris and Martin Salem also own the 76 gas station, Circle K, and sandwich shop across the street from the site on Prospect Avenue, just off Cuyamaca. Flight's owners say they've pulled together around $2.4 million for permits, site improvements, and inventory purchase for the first 3 months, but expect to earn $20 million or more in the first year. They also own 8 gas stations elsewhere, as well as convenience stores, a Mexican restaurant, and a barber shop. Santee stands to reap millions in new taxes, as well as get contributions to local nonprofit groups, through a request from the competing applicants to make a community benefit fee as part of their applications. This ranged from a baseline 5% up to 10% of gross sales, in addition to the city's sales tax of 7.75% and a state excise tax of 19% that each business must pay. That's a lot of money for the city, Green Reserve, which gained a permit to open a shop on Prospect Avenue, says it expects to contribute $800,000 for the city's community benefit fee and $200,000 for the funds targeting local charities. Santee becomes the 10th city in San Diego County to approve the sale of cannabis after first adopting an ordinance to do so in 2022. When it approved its ordinance, Santee officials said they were taking a proactive approach to the issue of selling legalized drugs within city limits. If the city continued to prohibit the sale of cannabis, it would likely be sued and lose any power to enact its standards and control over the companies selling the products that are legal in the state. As part of the vetting process, groups had to divulge details about their existing cannabis operations, their financial health, and how they would operate the business in Santee. Some also provided local connections that might curry favor with the council. Evan Johnson, CEO of Dr. Green Thumbs, noted his mother, Lizbeth Johnson, was a former superintendent of the Santee School District. Flight and the Salem brothers touted an endorsement from David Bejarano, the former police chief of San Diego and Chula Vista, as well as the former U.S. Marshal of Southern California. Green Reserve said Bill Berghoff, the owner of Santee's highly successful Sportsplex USA, was hired to be the business community outreach liaison. The four entities approved for the cannabis permits must still negotiate and have their individual cannabis business agreements approved by the council, then obtain all the necessary building or other permits associated with improving their sites. Finally, they have to obtain a cannabis permit from the California Department of Cannabis Control. All this could take an estimated 6 to 12 months, according to Sandy Sawa, Santee's planning director. All the selected groups for Santee's permits asserted that businesses would not only comply with the existing state and local rules, but do extensive public outreach to ensure the stores would be safe to visit and not cause any problems. The shops cannot be located within 900 feet of schools, churches, or other sensitive uses. All of the sites proposed by the applicants were in the city's industrial or commercial zones. Three of the four approved were in District 2. That district's representative, Ron Hall, voted against the cannabis ordinance in 2022, along with Mayor Minto. Russ Havens, publisher of SanDiegoCannabisTimes.com, a website that tracks the local industry, said he watched a good deal of the interviews and voting on the Santee permits via satellite TV and was surprised about how much financial detail the groups divulged since they are private companies. As far as problems such as theft, burglary, and loitering, that hasn't been apparent at existing local stores, he said. There's been some break-ins and grabbing products at some stores, but that has occurred more in L.A., not here, Havens said. With a plethora of cannabis shops operating in La Mesa and San Diego, and a total of some 70 dispensaries operating in the county, the question is whether there is enough demand in Santee for these new shops to be viable. But Havens believes there is, since a lot of Santee users will be happy not to make the trek over Highway 52 or Interstate 8 to buy cannabis.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
After years of wrangling, the public hearing on the fate of the Cottonwood Golf Course and whether it will be turned into a sand mine has been set for September 10th at 9 a.m. before the San Diego County Board of Supervisors. In July, the county's planning commission denied a major use permit for the project, after the commission deadlocked in a tie vote. The developers appealed to county supervisors, who hear from residents as well as the developers about the proposal to grant a major use permit to operate an industrial open-pit sand mine for a minimum of 10 years, after which reclamation efforts will be made to restore the land. The site along the Sweetwater River in Rancho San Diego is close to homes and businesses. It is also directly upstream from a federal wildlife preserve. The county's planning commission earlier this month denied the MUP, but the supervisors will be listening to testimony about it in September. Thousands of people opposed to the project have signed petitions and attended numerous public meetings in recent years. Concerns include increased traffic, air and water pollution, and noise. The Stop Cottonwood Sand Mine group has sent out an email urging residents and others concerned about the project to show up in person or call in to speak about the September 10th Board of Supervisors meeting. You can also contact your county supervisors or county chief of staff, Paul Worley, and once the agenda is published, a few days before the meeting, submit a public comment on the agenda item. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Juliet Sanders.
This is Miriam Raftery with an education report. All public boards in California are expected to follow the state's open government laws, but explosive revelations based on public records published by the San Diego Union-Tribune reveal secret meetings and backroom deals involving several Grossmont Union High School District trustees. In response, on July 17th, the district's governing board took the very unusual step of passing a resolution agreeing to follow the Brown Act and district bylaws, which trustees approved unanimously. Board President Gary Woods said the board unconditionally commits that it will cease and desist from the challenged past action, but insisted that there was no conclusive evidence that the board committed Brown Act violations, despite multiple media reports suggesting that they did. Before the meeting, amid calls for resignations of board members Gary Woods, Scott Eckert, Robert Shield, and Jim Kelly, district residents held a press conference at which Madeline McCurry-Schmidt raised serious allegations. She stated, "The majority block on the Grossmont School Board has left our schools without any campus librarians. They have diverted school funds to pay off their allies and their own campaign donors." She noted that Trustee Scott Eckert's campaign accepted money from a local lawyer whose firm helped pay for and create fake ghost candidates against Scott Eckert's political rival, Jay Steiger, to help Eckert win, as the Union Tribune reported. Once Eckert won, he voted to extend the district's contract and continue paying loans to John Howard's law firm. A recall effort is currently underway against Eckert, as well as three other trustees, Jim Kelly, Robert Shields, and Gary Woods. The conservative majority that voted for mass firings of teachers and librarians also implicated in the backdoor dealings described in the Union Tribune report. California government ethics and transparency experts say that the trustees' texts and emails raise concerns as to whether the governing board members are acting in the public's best interest or not, as well as over how much board business is conducted behind closed doors. According to John Pellicero, a government ethics director at Santa Clara University at the school's Markula Center for Applied Ethics, quoted in EdSource, "These kinds of actions erode trust in the school board and undermines their legitimacy in making policy for the school district." The conservative majority likely violated California's open government laws, including the Brown Act, by excluding Jay Steiger, the only Democrat on the board, from private texts and emails in which discussions were held among the other members about targeting individuals deemed disloyal to the majority. The board majority called these discussions their war room. Their conversations also disparaged teachers and staff perceived as indoctrinated by DEI and what they called an LGBTQ militant trans agenda. Board President Gary Woods opened the meeting where he assured that all viewpoints would be heard. Then he admonished the crowd present to be polite and respectful and avoid outbursts. He threatened to call a recess or removal of disruptive persons to assure a safe and respectful environment for all participants. The public voiced outrage anyway throughout the meeting. However, Woods ultimately did not remove anyone. Stephanie McKecka, president of the Grossmont Education Association, or GEA, the district's teachers' union, testified, "GEA is exploring every legal avenue for these Brown Act violations and these many plots by the board for district staff exploitation." The union president also slammed the board majority for shutting the union out of key discussions. McKecka said, "In the spring of last year, they cut off all communication and we have not been treated as a stakeholder at all," adding, "This is an abuse of power, as evidenced in these texts and emails." Rachel McCurry, a teacher, parent, and graduate of the district, told the board majority, "I am so ashamed of you. When I read those four Union Tribune stories, two of them on the front page above the fold, I saw clear proof that you have done things that are immoral. I saw that you retaliated and punished a librarian teacher for donating money to the person who ran against Mr. Eckert." Jason Ballesteri blasted the board for betrayal of the community and unethical governance. He noted that librarians were fired after the board's private text messages showed retribution as an aim and removal of woke books. Greg Kelly, a sponsor of the recall effort and father of Maggie Kelly, a former student board member, accused the board majority of actions showing favoritism, partisanship, and discrimination. Suzanne Sanwald, a West Hills librarian until the recent cut, said the absence of librarians will degrade education and library services. Other community members noted that when school starts in a few weeks, libraries will be empty for the first time in decades, since all of the librarians were fired. Numerous speakers urged the board majority to rescind the cuts and to resign. Trustee Chris Feit, the only board member to vote against cutting teachers, librarians, and other positions, told his colleagues on the board, "These folks don't have confidence in any of you." He also criticized the board majority's controversial proposal for an alternative ethnic studies curriculum, which Veit said excuses slavery and was reportedly created by a libertarian think tank. According to Veit, there is no ethnic studies for the upcoming school year. None of the other board members would respond to the concerns raised by Veit. Michelle Krug, a Democratic Party member and union activist, was not permitted to speak after submitting a late speaker card. This contrasts with the special board meeting on June 26, where a late attendee was permitted to speak on a closed session item without a speaker card and for longer than the allotted time of 3 minutes, even. Woods gaveled the public meeting to a close, after which the board adjourned to yet another closed-door session.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Women in California and across the country earn an average of 82% of what men make in the first 10 years after graduating from college, according to a new study from the National Association of Colleges and Employers. Researchers found that a significant portion of this disparity is attributed to where people work. Three-quarters of men are employed in the private sector, compared to only half of women. Mary Gatta is Director of Research and Policy at NACE.
So the top industries where men were employed were manufacturing, finance, insurance and real estate, the fire industries, and architecture engineering. Women are in education, healthcare and social assistance, and also professional and technical services. So women dominate more in lower paid industries.
Advocates say school districts should introduce boys and girls to all types of occupations, and in particular, encourage girls to take classes in science, technology, engineering, and math. California has tried to shrink the pay gap through public policy. Companies in the Golden State are prohibited from inquiring about a candidate's previous salary range during the hiring process. They are also required to disclose salary ranges in job postings or upon request. Gatta says colleges should offer robust career counseling to prepare students as they enter the workforce.
We also need to think about salary negotiation and helping remove any concerns that recent college grads might have about negotiating, helping prepare students for salary negotiation.
She adds that establishing a higher salary from the get-go pays dividends for many years. Conversely, the pay gap persists as women progress in their careers, so they contribute less to Social Security and receive lower payments in retirement. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Juliet Sanders with the Green Scene Report. As expected, a coalition of environmental groups led by Preserve Wild Santee have filed a new legal challenge against Santee's biggest residential project, Finita Ranch, which the city council most recently approved in June. The environmental coalition suing the city also includes the Center of Biological Diversity, the Endangered Habitats League, and the California Chaparral Institute. This was the third time in 5 years that Santee City Council gave its approval to the controversial 3,000-home development that has a history dating back to the 1990s. At every juncture, the environmental groups have opposed the project as dangerous, due to building in a very high fire hazard severity zone and being non-compliant with existing state laws covering a new construction. The area's long history of devastating fires has shown severe impacts on both wildlife and people. The latest suit states that the city is also ignoring passage of Measure N in 2020, which requires a public vote on any new development that increases density and amending the city's general plan. To avoid such a vote, the council in 2022 classified Finita Ranch as an essential housing project mandated by the state legislature in response to a severe housing shortage throughout California. That designation meant the project complied with the city's general plan, and thus did not require any vote, according to the city. The latest suit says no provision in state law allows for the city to more than double the density in its general plan, much less to thwart the due process and electoral rights of the voters. The suit also alleges that the city is violating state law because it failed to do a supplemental environmental impact report, or EIR, regarding significant new information on the project's wildlife impacts. In 2020, Superior Court Judge Catherine Bacall ruled the EIR deficient in a number of areas, including details about a citywide evacuation plan in the event of a major wildfire. The city had its consultants revise the plan, and the council approved it again in 2022. That was challenged by the same coalition last year on the grounds that the project violated state planning codes, which require that developments be consistent with the city's general plan. The city again revised its EIR and corrected the technical deficiencies noted by Bacall when she issued a second injunction in 2022. The Environmental Coalition said in its suit that clear evidence of the dangers of building in severe fire zones was underscored by the Eaton and Palisades fire in Los Angeles in January, which destroyed more than 57,000 acres and killed 29 people. The suit states, "Features of the project site make it uniquely at risk for these fast-moving, wind-driven fires. Its topography is in alignment with the Santa Ana winds, which can influence fire spread by creating wind-driven fires." City officials, including Santee's fire chief, assert that the project is defensible in the event of a major wildfire, and that the enhanced evacuation routes will ensure safety of residents in a timely manner. Finita Ranch, if ultimately built, would have nearly 3,000 homes, including single-family homes and condos, on around 2,600 acres in northwest Santee, between Mission Trails Regional Park and the MCAS Miramar Military Base. The development would include three villages, with 62.5% of the land designated as open space. It would also include a working farm, a vineyard, and a new fire station.
San Miguel Fire and Rescue Deputy Chief Tobin Riley appeared before the Crest Community Association in July to provide an update on construction of a new fire station 18 on the corner of Suncrest Boulevard and North Lane. The update was provided after Facebook posts by concerned residents wondered why the lot has been sitting empty for so long. Chief Riley said the station is being built in phases. The new two-story station will be double the size and capacity of the previous station, with approximately 8,000 square feet, six rooms, and a large two-door apparatus base. Nine construction companies have expressed an interest in bidding on the $4.1 million project. A ribbon cutting is planned for April 2026. The original Fire Station 18 was built in 1948 and surpassed its National Fire Protection Association's recommended lifespan of 70 years. It was built with materials and building codes that are considered hazardous and substandard by today's codes. A third-party company contracted to assess the fire station identified it as being functional, though not fully reliable, and in need of replacement, according to Riley. A post by the San Miguel Consolidated Fire Project website says the new construction highlights the district's commitment to investing in each of its stations to meet the emergency response needs of all citizens served. Chief Riley told the audience in Crest, "One of the challenges that we're having at this site is keeping a fire station open to the citizens here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, a fire engine with a paramedic on it." He assured, "We have never had a break in service." A concrete slab to be poured soon will support a metal building that is being constructed off-site. Chief Riley, who is overseeing the project, thanked the citizens for their support, giving credit for an awesome community. He assured the community that a memorial to Jack Dyer that was in front of the previous station will be placed in front of the new station once it's completed. Dyer was a volunteer firefighter who perished in a wildfire in October 1965. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
A 40-year-old Ramona man died after being struck by a vehicle shortly before midnight on July 18th. The victim was standing in the roadway on State Route 67 north of Archie Moore Road in Ramona, an area with low lighting, when a Dodge Challenger driven by an Irvine woman hit the pedestrian, according to the California Highway Patrol. The victim died at the scene. His identity has not yet been released by the county medical examiner. The Dodge driver was not injured. CHP Captain Monteagudo urges the public to always use sidewalks and crosswalks when crossing a roadway, adding, "Walking in the roadway puts you at serious risk of injury or worse. Be alert, be seen, and never assume drivers can see you." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Juliet Sanders.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
This is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County. Hot August nights and late summer days bring some of East County's most iconic events. This month's hot happenings include the Ramona Country Fair, San Diego Dark Sky Fest in Julian, a Gatsby-themed Mount Helix Food and Wine Festival celebrating the park's centennial, a county music pool party at Saquon, Santee's Summer Concerts, La Mesa's Classic Car Show, Macy Gray in concert at the Magnolia, Grammy Award-winning Alabama Shakes at San Diego State, Julian Mountain Brew Fest, Open Farm Days at the Oasis Camel Dairy, Hakumbia Fest in Hakumba Hot Springs, and more. And here are details. Amusement rides, carnival games, live music, and more are all part of the Ramona Country Fair. The fun takes place August 1st through 3rd at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center in Ramona. The festivities also include a cornhole competition, kids' power wheel race, off-road show, craft beers and local wines, dog events, craft and commercial vendors, and more. The live music lineup includes many well-known local bands and talented singers. This event is open to the community, though there is a fee for parking. For hours and a full lineup of live entertainment, you can visit RamonaChamber.com. Santee's Summer Concert Series concludes with 80s All-Stars on August 7th playing hits from the 80s and Jimmy's Buffet, a Jimmy Buffett tribute band, on August 14th. Concerts run from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Town Center Community Park East in Santee. August is the last month for the La Mesa Classic Car Show this year, held each Thursday from 5 to 8 p.m. along La Mesa Boulevard in the heart of La Mesa's downtown village. The last four musical performers are June and John's Rockin' Country Caravan on August 7th, Zealand on August 14th, That Beatles Cover Band August 21st, and the 80s All-Stars for the season finale on August 28th. Find more info at lamesavillageassociation.org. Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona will host Open Farm Days on August 9th and 23rd, where you can watch a live show with camels and talking birds, watch a turkey stampede, feed, and meet the animals. Advanced tickets are required and may be purchased online at cameldairy.com. Four-time Grammy Award-winning rock band Alabama Shakes will be live in concert at the Cal Coast Open Air Amphitheater at San Diego State University on August 10th. Their hit songs include Hold On, Don't Wanna Fight, and Killer Diller Blue. For tickets, you can visit the Associated Students site at San Diego State University. In Cash After Dark on August 13th, tribute artist Cliff Wright brings music of Johnny Cash to Saquon's Up Close and Personal Theater. Wright regularly performs in Vegas as well as on tour. For tickets, you can visit saquon.com/events. On August 14th, Muscatine Bloodline brings a country music pool party complete with line dancing to the river at Saquon. The Alabama duo earned a standing ovation at the Grand Ole Opry, and they've sold out shows nationwide with music inspired by the Cajun fishing villages where they grew up. For tickets and details, visit saquon.com/events. Grammy Award-winning soul and R&B singer and actress Macy Gray will perform at the Magnolia in El Cajon on August 15th at 7 p.m. Known for her distinctive raspy voice and singing style influenced by Billie Holiday, she has sold over 25 million records worldwide, released 10 albums, and was inducted into the National Rhythm and Blues Hall of Fame in 2014. She's best known for her international hit single, I Try. Gray has also appeared in many movies, including Training Day, Spider-Man, Scary Movie 3, Lackawanna Blues, and The Paperboy. For tickets to her concert at the Magnolia, you can visit magnoliasandiego.com. Celebrate the night sky at the San Diego Dark Sky Network on Saturday, August 25th from 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. at Mangini Winery in Julian, an international dark sky community. August 16th will be a dark, moonless night and a good opportunity to view the Perseid meteor shower. Local astronomers will set up telescopes to view other night sky features, including the Milky Way galaxy. You can also enjoy a tour of the night sky with laser pointers and hands-on activities for kids. Plus, hear from Dr. Robert Quimby, director of the Mount Laguna Observatory and an astronomy professor at San Diego State University, about their astronomical research. For more information, visit juliandarkskynetwork.com. You're invited to don your best Roaring Twenties attire and party the night away atop Mount Helix on August 16th at the Mount Helix Food and Wine Festival, which this year has a Great Gatsby theme. The event celebrates the 100th anniversary of the Mount Helix Nature Park. Guests will enjoy two live bands, dancing under the stars, a speakeasy, food and beverage sampling booths, live and silent auctions, and more, all to benefit the Mount Helix Park Foundation. For tickets, visit mounthelixpark.org/festival, and that's Mount Helix, MTHELIXpark.org/festival. The Julian Chamber of Commerce invites you to savor the Julian Mountain Brew Fest at Nickel Beer Company on August 23rd from noon to 4 p.m. Your ticket includes 8 tastings, a commemorative cup, and live music by the Sun Valley String Band. Bad Vibes, Good Friends, and Hakumba Hot Springs Hotel will present Hakumbia Fest on August 30th, starting at 5 p.m. This is a one-night celebration of Afro-Colombian rhythms, traditional and psychedelic cumbia from Colombia, Mexico, and USA. This powerful night of music and dance features the legendary Los Gaiteros de San Jacinto, torchbearers of Colombia's ancestral gaita and cumbia traditions. Sharing the stage will be Bogota's experimental groove magicians, Rumparayo, known for their wild percussion-driven reinventions of tropical classics, and Tijuana's own La Diabla, fusing border town swagger with sultry sonidero energy, plus DJ Strange Bouquets and DJ Matt Bazone of Space Hall Sound Machine. Set in the landscape of Hakumba Hot Springs, this desert gathering promises a sonic pilgrimage that spans generations and continents. You're invited to come early for a soak and stay late for the music. For tickets and details, you can visit hakumba.com. And you can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar of events at eastcountymagazine.org. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
A 60-year-old El Cajon woman is dead and three others injured as a result of a three-vehicle crash on July 19th on Dehesa Road in unincorporated El Cajon. Her identity has not yet been released by the county medical examiner. According to the California Highway Patrol, she was driving a Nissan Sentra westbound on Dehesa Road when her vehicle crossed over the center double yellow lines and struck a Honda Pilot driven by a 77-year-old El Cajon woman. The Nissan driver could not regain control and then crashed into a Ford F-150 pickup truck driven by another El Cajon woman with a female passenger. The Ford overturned onto the roadway. The Nissan driver was pronounced dead at the scene by medical personnel. The driver of the Honda sustained minor injuries and was transported to Sharp Memorial Hospital. The driver and passenger of the Ford sustained minor injuries and were transported to Sharp Grossmont Hospital. The deadly accident shut down Dehesa Road in both directions during the investigation. This is an ongoing investigation. It is unknown at this time if drugs and/or alcohol were a factor in the crash, according to the CHP. CHP Captain Monteagudo reminds the public that maintaining your lane is not just about following the rules. It's about safe driving. Captain Monteagudo reminds motorists to stay centered, stay alert, and stay focused to help save lives. Reporting for East County Magazine, on KNSJ. This is John Tidwell.
Keith and Priscilla Webb, best known locally as the owners of Julian Hard Cider, the nation's first craft cider company, passed away 3 days apart in July. They also owned Apple Lane Orchard, a popular wedding and vacation rental destination in Julian. Both are remembered as generous community members who contributed to numerous local charities as well as being successful business owners. Keith Webb died on July 4th at age 94. He was born in 1930 in Iowa during the Depression and Prohibition era. He grew up in the Russell Brothers circus family in Missouri, and in his youth, he toured with the circus and co-authored a book about it. He later served in the U.S. Navy for a decade starting in 1947. Priscilla Webb died on July 1st at age 98. She was born in San Diego County in 1926. She lived in several local communities, including Del Cerro and Julian here in East County. She was an avid horse racing and Chargers fan who was also devoted to charities, serving on boards of Gold Diggers and Angels of Aceltine School. She was co-founder of Park and Ride, the first off-site airport parking lot in San Diego. Keith and Priscilla married in 1986 and worked together at Park and Ride until selling it in 2007. The couple shifted their focus to Julian, where they became co-owners of Julian Hard Cider, founded in 2009, and purchased Apple Lane Orchard, where they also sold soft cider and made deliveries well into their 90s. Julian Hard Cider's site lists Ken Knox as the co-owner and manager of the business, which is still in operation. Survivors include the couple's grandson, Eugene Estabrook, and his family. On Facebook's Julian Connection page, Julian residents shared memories of the couple. Michelle Harvey, former co-owner of the Julian News, wrote, "They did plenty for this community." Outdoor educator Greg Schuett posted, "The Vulcan Mountain Foundation Education Center is dedicated to their generosity." Joint services for Keith and Priscilla Webb are being held August 3rd at Greenwood Mortuary, according to obituaries published in the San Diego Union-Tribune. The couple will be interred at Miramar National Cemetery. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Therapists are stepping up to help undocumented students deal with the pervasive fear created by the Trump administration's ongoing ICE raids. The group Immigrants Rising offers free online counseling to undocumented students in California ages 18 to 45. Myra Barragan O'Brien is the mental health senior manager with the nonprofit Immigrants Rising.
They struggle with the fear of family separation, with anxiety, financial struggles, relationship struggles, discrimination. And so these mental health providers help them find the ways to cope with those stressors.
The program started during the first Trump administration and has provided about 24,000 hours of therapy to almost 800 undocumented immigrant students to date. People can learn more online at immigrantsrising.org/mental health connector. The deadline to apply is August 11th. Barragan O'Brien says all counselors are licensed therapists who have lived experience or who work with the undocumented community.
They will be connected with a therapist who understands their experience, who will not judge, who will meet them where they are, who are culturally sensitive.
Most of the therapy is conducted in English, but some therapists also speak Spanish, Mandarin, or Tagalog. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. News deserts are more common in rural than urban America, and finding information could get harder now that the Republican-led Congress has stripped public broadcasting of all federal funds. President Donald Trump demanded the cuts, claiming public radio programming is biased. Sage Smiley is news director at Alaska's KYUK, which lost 70% of its budget due to the cuts.
The communities that will be most affected are the ones that are the smallest and have the most to lose.
Half the stations getting those funds are rural. KYUK serves about 60 communities and 25,000 residents in Alaska's Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Smiley stresses the rural outlet is one of the few places locals can access news for free.
Public broadcasting exists for everyone and has connected so many people to each other and to their communities.
Last year, the number of news deserts, U.S. counties without any local outlets, grew to 208. Funding cuts have terminated a program that served rural Oregon for 3 decades. Julia Tilton reports.
The Department of Government Efficiency ended an AmeriCorps partnership with the University of Oregon that sent volunteers to rural areas. Titus Tomlinson with the university's RARE program says their grants won't be back this fall, cutting their work with communities statewide by more than half.
The damage has been done. This type of a shock, it's resulted in us losing well over 50% of our members.
That'll impact both those communities and the young professionals AmeriCorps placed with local organizations right out of college. Professor Lauren Michelle Kramer says she's seen those optimistic, energetic volunteers help in food and agriculture for more than 10 years.
That loss will be felt, I think, for a long time just because I'm not sure what's going to be able to take the place of programs like that.
I'm Julia Tilton.
A century-old South Dakota church is a living example of its town's nickname. Aberdeen, often called Hub City, was a major railroad junction in the 19th century. Now the state's third largest city, it's where Pastor Jeff Willock keeps a spokesturning at Bethlehem Lutheran Church, bringing together folks of different backgrounds, politics, and personal identities.
I'm continually committed to being pastor with people that I disagree with.
Willock's sermons encourage members, many who've worked and lived on family farms for generations, to accept people who might not fit into conventional boxes, including those who are gay and transgender. Church member Kathy Durst says it's a place where people of all viewpoints share pews to worship.
When you hear about churches and how they're declining, I just don't feel that here at all. We always have new members joining. We always have a lot going on.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Miriam Raftery taking you on the road to a new attraction abloom in the mountains of East County. If you love lavender, here's a sweet story about a place to escape the hustle and bustle of urban living for a tranquil oasis in rural Ramona, about an hour from San Diego. The Oasis Camel Dairy, long an attraction for visitors, has planted lavender fields. The new Camel Valley Lavender Farm on Old Julian Highway is now open with fields of fragrant lavender blooms. Nearby, you can view a herd of 21 camels against the beautiful backdrop of the Santa Isabel Mountains. Gil Riegler founded Oasis Camel Dairy 20 years ago with his wife, Nancy. They opened up Camel Valley Lavender in summer of 2025. With a little help from a longtime ranch friend, Gil plowed, irrigated, and planted over 3,000 lavender plants by hand on several acres. Envisioning the lavender fields of his dreams, Gil wanted Carmel Valley Lavender to be a place that did more than just provide essential oils used for products offered for sale here. Not only is he a lavender farmer and a camel whisperer, he is also very talented in using his hands, and he makes all the soaps that they sell by hand. He wanted a destination for visitors to immerse themselves in nature, pastoral views of grazing camels, and breathtaking mountain vistas. Gil envisions giving guests more than just a look at the popular purple flowers. His vision is for Camel Valley Lavender to be an outdoor classroom where guests can learn about the origins of lavender farming, the different kinds of lavender and their uses, and what makes happy lavender grow. His lavender field features lavender plants of 5 different varieties, including bouquet, culinary, ornamental, and essential oil varieties. Camel Valley Lavender is open to the public on Saturdays and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., but only through July 27th this year, when the lavender season ends. Families are welcome, including friendly dogs. There's no fee for admission to stroll through the fields, and you can pick your own bundle of lavender for a fee. In addition, there is a gift shop that sells lavender, crafted lavender products, and a variety of essential oils. Plus, you can purchase camel products, such as lotions made from camel milk, as well as camel milk soap with scents such as frankincense and myrrh, plus snacks and beverages. At 11 a.m. and 2:30 p.m., the camels have a late breakfast and lunch, coming right down to the pasture fence by the lavender field to greet visitors. The Oasis Camel Dairy also offers special events, including monthly farm tours and festivals, where guests can feed camels, watch a camel show and exotic talking bird show, visit and pet miniature sheep, watch turkey races, and even ride a camel. Gil Riegler says, deciding how to use vacant land next to the camel dairy, he chose lavender because it is drought-tolerant and beautiful, with calming properties and a soothing scent. He adds, "I also wanted something that would nurture the soul. Lavender does this. The scent and color has that effect on people. It is something that is needed these days." You can bring some of that relaxation home, not only with body care products such as lotions and lip balms, but also in handcrafted lavender wreaths, dried bouquets, culinary lavender for cooking, lavender plants, and more. Gil originally came to love camels when he used them in therapy programs for children. He met and married Nancy, who ran the exotic bird shows at the San Diego Zoo's Wild Animal Park, now called the Safari Park. Gil says he and Nancy both love people too, as well as camels and birds, so they expanded into educational programs. Gil says, "We love hanging out with our guests. We love seeing the smiles on the faces of our visitors. Camels and people, our two favorite things. The lavender fields are an extension of this love," he adds. "Now we get to create a relaxing, magical place for guests to visit." To learn more or plan your visit, you can check out their website at CamelDairy.com or CamelDairy.com/lavender.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
In the good old summertime, in the good old summertime, strolling through the shady lanes with your baby mine. You hold her hand and she holds yours, and that's a very good sign that she's your tootsie wootsie in the good old summertime.
The County of San Diego has opened its annual Cool Zones program, giving people free, safe, air-conditioned sanctuaries to escape extreme heat. The county created the Cool Zone program 2 decades ago to give older adults, people with disabilities, and those with health concerns that could be complicated by effects of extreme heat. The program will run from June 1st through October 31st. Sites include the county's 33 branch libraries, community centers, and other locations across the county, including here in East County. A complete list of Cool Zone sites, hours, and locations is located online at coolzones.org. That site includes a map where you can type in your address and find locations near you. You can also call 211 to find a location, or if you can't get to a Cool Zone, you can even ask for help with free transportation. Extreme heat can be very dangerous for older adults and children especially, and everybody is recommended to shelter in cool locations when the temperature gets too hot. Working or exercising outside on a hot day or staying in a hot space too long can cause heat-related illnesses from cramps to exhaustion to heat stroke, a condition when the body can no longer control its own temperature. Signs of heat stroke or exhaustion include having an extremely high body temperature, 103 degrees or higher, dizziness, nausea, confusion, and headache. Anybody suffering those symptoms should call 911 and be cooled off immediately. Now, in addition to providing Cool Zone locations, the county, working with San Diego Gas and Electric, is now providing free electric fans to older or disabled San Diegans living on limited incomes. To be eligible for the fan program, county residents must be 60 years or older, or disabled, living on a limited income, must not have access to an air-conditioned space at their home or apartment building, and be unable to travel to a Cool Zone site. To learn more about the Cool Zone fan program or to request a fan, you can call 211 or visit coolzones.org. The Cool Zone program is operated by the County Health and Human Services Agency. For more information about the Cool Zones program, as well as tips to stay cool at home and locations near you, again, that website is coolzones.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
As temperatures rise, here are some health facts to keep in mind from Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna, along with tips to stay cool. Hot weather can impact your cardiovascular system. As heat rises, sweating can lead to dehydration, which reduces blood plasma, making your blood more concentrated. This can strain the heart and raise the risk of clots, especially in those with heart disease, stroke history, or clotting disorders. Hot temperatures also dilate blood vessels near the skin to help release heat, but this causes blood pressure to drop, which can lead to dizziness or fainting. To compensate for lower pressure and maintain circulation, your heart may beat faster. Along with fluids, You also lose sodium and potassium through sweat. These electrolytes are vital for nerve and muscle function, including your heart. The combination of vasodilation, dehydration, and electrolyte shifts can make your heart work harder, especially if you have pre-existing conditions. People most at risk include older adults, young children, anybody working or exercising outdoors in heat, firefighters, people with conditions such as heart disease, high blood pressure, or kidney conditions, and those taking medications such as beta blockers, ACE inhibitors, or diuretics. So here are some tips to stay safe during the heat. Hydrate regularly. Don't wait until you're thirsty to drink water. When hiking, carry more water than you think you'll need and avoid any strenuous outdoor activities during peak heat hours. Wear breathable clothing and use sunscreen. If you're sensitive to heat or on medication, monitor your blood pressure and watch for warning signs such as dizziness, rapid pulse, or muscle cramps. You can also eat heart-friendly summer foods. Watermelon hydrates and contains heart-friendly lycopene. Berries are rich in antioxidants. Tomatoes, avocados, and cucumbers are cooling and anti-inflammatory. And grilled fish, such as salmon or tuna, is high in omega-3 fatty acids, which is good for your heart. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Paul Levico with a business report from East County Magazine. For years, there have been rumors that Grossmont Center's new owners might tear down the shopping mall built in 1961 to build housing. But now, those rumors have been dispelled. Grossmont Center is in for some major renovations, but it will remain a retailer for now. On July 8th, the La Mesa City Council unanimously approved the first phase of a new design for the outdoor shopping mall owned by Federal Realty Investment Trust. Phase 1 focuses on storefronts between the two anchor stores, Target and Walmart, with a modern design theme including architectural features, materials, and colors. The central plaza will be renovated with outdoor seating, shade structures, lighting, a fountain, and a community gathering space. 30 new trees and low-water native plants will also be added. In addition, there will be improvements to sidewalks and access for disabled shoppers. Energy-efficient lighting and security bollards will be installed. Councilmember Genevieve Suzuki thanked the mall owner representative on behalf of her 16-year-old daughter. She says, "I'm a mall rat. Man, I love the mall." She voiced appreciation for the mall as a space for the kids that is safe and fun. Future phases will focus on renovating the Macy's building and the southern portion of the center. According to La Mesa officials, the project aligns with the city's urban design program. The city believes the Grossmont Center renovation will help modernize the center, support tenants, and attract more visitors.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
Our East County Magazine Radio Show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.